All right, back in the action. Oh, no, Gina Grana, everybody won her. Jesus, you have it. For Gina, drop.
Thank you.
All right, excellent. Great to have you back, Gina.
I'm so happy to be here.
All right, now I'm going to read two quick tweets from you guys, #2ITLive during the show. Billy Runaway says he's got a suggestion for who should head NOAA. George Costanza is a marine biologist. He'll do it. Okay. But Trump might actually believe that. Remember, all of his info from TV.
That's true.
And he believes anything he sees. Yeah. So
I stood eye to eye with the great fish, whale, whatever. Yeah. Thank you for getting that.
He's sitting at home thinking, like, what names have I heard? And he just hears Costanza. He can't avoid.
Another good one.
It was one of my favorite line, but I can't remember it. It was a mile in the same whale episode.
Right, if he was
like an old man sending back soup at a deli.
Okay, and Titty Wright wrote in, F that list, referring to the TYT co-host list that was bandied about, I believe, by us. This is probably the single best four-person arrangement possible on the network. Mank is a must.
Ooh. Look at you, big stud.
Finally, it's a little too late now, but
I don't personally agree.
Yeah, that sounds outrageous, but okay. Everybody's got an
opinion. Let's test it. Get out.
All right, go ahead, John.
Okay. Ohio is one of the states that has been hit hardest in the opioid epidemic up until this point, and in an attempt to fight back, we now have a major legal challenge. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine filed a lawsuit Wednesday against at least five pharmaceutical companies considered central to the nation's opioid epidemic. Its inclusion of five large drug manufacturers makes it one of the most sweeping lawsuit challenges so far in this area, and Ohio is the first state in the US to file such a suit. Now, some of those companies include Johnson & Johnson, its subsidiary Janssen Pharmaceuticals, Purdue Pharma, and Cephalon Inc. Now, these are some of the corporations, of course, that produce the opioids that have become so rife in states across the country, but in particular in Ohio. And I want to talk about some of the numbers to give you an idea of the severity, the extent of the problem in that state. According to the CDC, 3,300 Ohioans died due to overdose in 2015 alone, an increase of over 20% in 1 year.
But now look at. I'm sorry, John. I'm just going to give a little bit of context. So, to be fair, yes, 3,310 people died that year from a prescription overdose from just opioids. But how many people died of marijuana in Ohio that year?
Let's bring up the graphic.
Thousands more.
Zero. Carry on.
Probably, yeah.
It was one of the other.
And a very popular drug, by the way. It's been experimented on a lot. But I want to give you some more numbers, some more scary numbers. Back in 2012, more than 790 million doses of opioids were prescribed to patients in Ohio, enough to supply every man, woman, and child in the state with 68 pills each.
Amazing!
I know. Some of these numbers I came across. Because
I don't think that's how they distributed them.
Yeah. For the you don't get in line to get your
faster. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you have to register at the DMV and they send you your pills, 68 each. And then in 2016, 2.3 million people in Ohio were prescribed an opioid. That's 20% of the state's entire population. Well, these are incredibly powerful drugs that have somehow, even as year after year the problem has become worse and more people have died unnecessarily and addiction rates are skyrocketing, still have this aura that it's a painkiller. I've taken painkillers before, and it's the doctors with the profit motive being given money by the pharmaceutical companies to push these drugs that are producing those sorts of misconceptions, and they're deadly misconceptions.
Okay, more amazing things about this story. If 20% of the population is taking the pills, and you would get 68 pills per person in the state, well, you do a little bit of math, times it by 68 by 5, and you get 340. So for everyone who is prescribed the pills, they're taking, on average, 340 pills.
Of course, a lot of it is being sold to people who are not prescribed the drugs.
Yeah. So we're hooked on this stuff, literally. You know, the gateway drug they warned us about, they said it was marijuana. But it isn't. This is literally the gateway drug because, first of all, it can kill you. Second of all, if it doesn't, it leads you to seek out things that are cheaper but give you the same effect, which is heroin.
Right.
And then heroin then oftentimes kills you, let alone the all the people who survived, but whose lives are absolutely ruined. But all of this,
really fast before you move on from that, and so I mean those numbers are not included in this. Like the people who start on opioids and eventually end up on illegal drugs and die as a result of that, that's its own epidemic that people don't realize is inherently connected to this one.
And all of those amazing numbers pales in comparison to the more amazing part of the story, that it is Republicans in Ohio that are suing giant pharmaceutical companies, including Johnson & Johnson, and holding them accountable. I can literally cannot remember the last time that happened. Yeah, so that's amazing. Yeah, and by the way, congratulations to them, Mike DeWine and John Kasich in Ohio, who's the governor there.
Yeah, and Mary Taylor is the lieutenant governor of Ohio, and she's going to run for governor coming up. And she very publicly came out. She has two sons, 26 and 23, both of them addicted. Man. And she says it's been a horror and a nightmare. And she says they're both doing better. We are not out of the woods. One is still in treatment. One is out of treatment, but it's a daily struggle and it's better right now, but it's just awful and no family should have to go through it.
Well, and that's the other thing too. There's people who just have an addictive personality. It's in their genes. It's an allergy. You know, there's nothing they can do about it. But it seems like from family and friends that I know that this doesn't discriminate. This doesn't care if you have an addictive issue or not. You'll get addicted because if you're in pain, one pill's not going to be enough eventually. Four pills isn't enough eventually. Eight pills isn't enough eventually. That can happen to any of us.
So yeah, and there have been other lawsuits, but Ohio is the first state to file a lawsuit like this. Again, further congratulations to them for being this bold and right. And so what are they suing about? They're saying, well, look, there's deceptive marketing practices here because they're not saying anymore that you should just take it as a temporary solution to pain. They're saying you should take it all the time for chronic pain. But that is horribly misleading because if you do, you will almost certainly get addicted.
Yeah. And can I pile on to that and say, the craziest thing on the planet is that now we're normalizing the fact that you can't go to the bathroom because you're hooked on. There are so many commercials for opioid addictive constipation.
That's right, medicine. That's right.
That's a real thing. Yeah. I thought it was from The Onion the first time I saw that ad. It's real. Hey, take too many pills and can't poop. We got you. Don't worry about it.
Some more pills.
It's insane. Right,
yeah. And so the real dangerous drug dealers in America, and this is not an exaggeration at this point at all, are the pharmaceutical companies. But I want you to like have context. That doesn't mean that they only do bad things. They also create drugs that save lives. So just the world is not just black and white and you know just evildoers and good folks and stuff. So what we're trying to do, and apparently what the state of Ohio is trying to do, is keep making the drugs that save lives. And by the way, and have painkillers for when people need painkillers, but do not market it as something that treats a chronic condition, because it will get people hooked and people will die.
And as you know, led by, I think, Obama first, and then certainly Hillary Clinton embraced it, and Bernie Sanders was certainly in favor of it too. You know, opioid addiction became a sort of surprising issue in the 2016 campaign and got talked about a lot. Donald Trump looking to slash the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy by 95%. And the reaction to that among many Republicans, including some voters who I read, were like, hey, I thought you talked about it, maybe it was John, but there was a reaction of, hey, I thought like the deal was you were concerned that especially in places like West Virginia where the and Ohio, where the epidemic is so widespread, that people were like, no, we needed help on this. This needs to be an issue that is exactly addressed by a White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. That's exactly what they should be doing. And the Trump administration is having a 95% cut is the proposal in that office.
And it's another area where John Kasich actually was very outspoken about.
Yes, that's right. He was outspoken about it too, you're right.
Yeah, and especially when we're talking about like, you know, treating chronic pain, like imagine if we had a drug that helps with chronic pain that doesn't lead to overdose deaths, and for some reason is still in the vast majority of our country illegal. You can go to jail theoretically for it. It's stigmatized. God help us if kids might be exposed to it. And of course, that's weed. And it's weird that the way that we talk about these different drugs is so stupid. And at one point, it just shocked me that like people would argue so fervently against weed and then go home and get drunk off a bottle of wine or whiskey or something like that. And I get it, that's ingrained in our society, okay. People can't see how ridiculous that is. but that they don't see the comparison between weed and this. That some people literally think that they're on the same tier. People like our attorney general think that these are comparable substances, comparably dangerous.
This is legal and marijuana isn't. It's unreal.
Yeah.
It's so anti-scientific, it's insane. And yet even Democrats are not yet willing to consider legalizing marijuana.
I was trying to avoid saying it, but there's a racial component to it. And Jeff Sessions is an old school racist. And he still thinks that it's the hopheads and coloreds who are doing the marijuana drugs. And that's, and obviously I'm using the kind of speech that people like Jeff Sessions would use. Hopheads.
I don't even know what it is. I'm gonna have to Google it.
And the sense is that these drugs are white people drugs. This is medicine prescribed in an official way. What is gonna change marijuana policy in this country is when guys like Jeff Sessions come to understand that white people, men and women, might enjoy marijuana also, and might benefit from marijuana. To John's point, that there are actual legitimate medicinal qualities, and we're not talking about people suffering with serious illnesses, and I don't want to disregard that. That's important. It helps there. But as you said, chronic pain, like a way to alleviate chronic pain or chronic anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question, and maybe it's coming from a naive place, but I don't think so, is do we really believe that these people truly don't understand this? Or do you just follow the money, and once Big Pharma gets to market it and prescribe it and sell it, then it's going to be a whole different story?
No, so of course you're right about that, Gina. And we know that Nixon originally did the war on drugs, according to one of his aides, to almost literally what Ben said, because they said they wanted to target their political enemies, which were black people and hippie liberals. And they perceive them as the ones who took drugs, etc. Now it has morphed into, well, if marijuana addresses chronic pain and the drug that I charge a lot of money for and is a multi-billion dollar industry also can address chronic pain, I don't want you to legalize marijuana. And the states that have legalized this, so there's the pharmaceutical angle to it. And they are, by the way, the number one political donors in the country. More than oil companies, more than banks. Drug companies are number one in political corruption where they purchase politicians. And it's also the alcohol companies. Alcohol companies are now fighting ballot measures to legalize marijuana all over the country, because in states that legalize marijuana, alcohol sales go way down.
Of course.
Because it's much, much cheaper and you still get buzzed. So anyway, finally.
Lower carb.
My God, right?
Oh, good point. Until, of course, you get the munchies.
Oh, you get the edibles.
Right.
They come in Rice Krispie, you know.
So finally, back to the political reasons behind this. I'll give you the cynical version, but it doesn't take away any credit. So yes, I think Ben is right. It's starting to affect white people. In this case, literally, so there's a politician in this story that that we explained whose family members were affected, and they're like, whoa, wait. That's me. That's not the other people that I thought were bad guys.
Right.
So that's affecting me. So we're going to do something about this. And then secondarily, John Kasich is going to run against Donald Trump in the primaries if Donald Trump's still around. And he has opposed Trump on almost everything. He was among the top three finishers when Trump won last time around. And he is positioning himself as a moderate Republican. If you're going to do that, this is a wonderfully bold and smart strategy to do that.
Again, both sides will love.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So there is politics behind this, but I'll take it, right? If your politics as a Republican is to do the smart and reasonable thing, because you think it'll help you with the voters, deal. Yeah.
We gotta move on.
But let's just think for 20 seconds. If nothing could help the future of the Republican Party in this country more than if Donald Trump hangs around and John Kasich runs against him, mm-hmm. because he might win, and that is literally the only way this Republican Party would nominate somebody like John Kasich who could win a general election.
Yeah, this is going to be a very popular lawsuit in Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah, even among Republicans. Okay, let's go.
Okay. Louisville's murder rate is unfortunately recently gone up, and to help to fix that problem, Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin is calling on citizens to form roving prayer squads. Bevin urged volunteers to form teams of 3 to 10 people, which is a standard prayer squad size, that pick the same block to walk at the same time of day, which is important for obsessive people, at least 2 to 3 times a week. He urged participants to make a year-long commitment because if you stop too soon, the prayer will not stop the rising murder rates. So he said this, go around the block, pause on each corner, pray for the people there, move to the next corner. And over the course of the year, here's what's going to happen. They're going to get to know the people on the block. Well, I should hope so. Bevin said it's a chance for people of faith to put their faith to work. He said it's pretty unsophisticated, which I will back up, pretty uncomplicated, pretty basic. But I truly believe we're going to see a difference in our city. I personally believe in the power of prayer. Bevin also downplayed the availability of guns as a problem behind Louisville's murder rate. He called the homicide spree a cultural, spiritual, and economic problem because those sorts of problems don't hurt the NRA if you solve them. And a ministerial group from some Louisville neighborhoods hardest hit by the violence called for updating what they see as lax gun laws that make it, quote, easier to buy a gun in West Louisville than a piece of fresh fruit. And so I understand that I've been pretty dismissive of this prayer thing, and certainly people getting more involved in their community is a perfectly fine thing. But this is, of course, a distraction from changes that could actually solve the murder rate. And telling people, I mean, coming the day after, I think it is, that who is the Republican who said, let's not worry about climate change, God will solve it
Tim
in the
Walberg.
End. There's, what's that?
Tim Walberg in Michigan.
Thank you. There's this Christian fatalism that some conservatives fall to, and on issues that are so pressing and so deadly, we cannot allow people under the guise of something that seems nice and community building to allow murders to go on, to allow the climate to continue to heat up. I mean, these are incredibly consequential things, and people who are not serious or sophisticated or you know, don't understand how complicated it is, they're the ones in charge.
Well, it's very Muslim of them. Islam in Arabic means to submit, and one of the central premises of Islam is submit to the will of God. Let him handle it. You know, don't try to solve anything. And so I'm oversimplifying that, and Muslims will get angry about it. But there is a lot of truth to it, and part of why I didn't like Islam. Like, wait. I'm a human being. I can act. I could do things, right? And I'm not going to sit around and go, maybe God will solve it, right? So obviously, this is not the correct strategy. But I will give him credit for this. It is, he understands that there is a side effect to it, and perhaps that he's couching it in terms that politically could work well in Kentucky. And what he's trying to do is get the community to talk to one another and to interact. On the other hand, that doesn't really help with stray bullets. And that's so there's this case of a 7-year-old boy that was killed last month by a stray bullet. He's eating dinner at the table and inside the house, and bullet comes in and kills the kid. And when they asked the mom, she said she appreciated the prayers. And she's like, that sounds like a nice idea. I wish it would work. But she said, quote, I'm trying to get out of the neighborhood that I'm in because I've still got another child. Yeah. She's like, you want to walk around the neighborhood, but you might catch a bullet. And so for me, the situation is dire enough. I got to go.
Right.
Of all the things that have put Matt Bevin in the news, this is by far the least objectionable. This is a Tea Party candidate. You know, he won the Republican primary for governor by like less than 100 votes, like
oh, really?
The 70,520 to 70,450. I mean, some staggeringly close against McConnell's guy. He's a Tea Party insurgent. He hates the same-sex marriage decision. Joined with a bunch of other governors, a couple of dozen governors, to ban Syrian refugees from coming to Kentucky because that's where they want to go. So I loathe Matt Bevin, and Matt Bevin is a bad for America. But this is, there are worse things to do. It's sort of, there's a nice quality to this. I fear I'm dubious. Well, you know what? I was going to say something lousy, but I hope good people would show out, and it can only help.
I don't know. Sorry, Gina, you're going to get to it. It's not going to help. No, it's pointless. I'm not going. This is a concerted effort to say I'm not going to do anything.
That's
and
right.
To purposely ignore the actual problem. Whatever problems that help form issues that happen in the street communities, that maybe something goes down like this. Crime goes up. Why does crime go up? I don't care. Pray about it. Why do people not have jobs? I don't care. Pray about it. Why is there guns rampant in the neighborhood? I don't care. Pray about it. It means you don't care. No, it's cool to pray, but guess what? You can pray from home. I grew up in a Christian household. I prayed for a grandmother that was in another state. It still worked. So you don't have to go to the corner to pray. It's just say, hey, get out there and pray so that I don't have to do anything or think about it anymore.
JR's point is better than mine.
The first thing I thought of when I heard this story was, is it a little bit ironic? Because isn't this generally the kind of things that the right makes fun of the left for doing, like, oh, you're gonna march, you're gonna protest, you're gonna have a little little vigil with a candle. But this is that, right? So, I mean, it, also with what JR says that it might not move the needle, but it's nice, it's fine, it's whatever, but it's usually not supported by this particular group of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and finally, so they're not talking about rural Kentucky here, they're talking about urban Kentucky. And so when the governor refers to a cultural, spiritual, and economic problem, he's also, that's loaded language to say, it's your fault for getting killed because you have a cultural problem. And I'm not just extrapolating that from one word, it's Fox News says it over and over again. They say, no, it's not a problem of guns, the things that are actually killing people or the bullets that are killing them. It's the problem of black culture. Fox News lays it out. Matt Bevin used the word culture in that context to trigger
people already get it.
Yes.
And he sued Planned Parenthood and he's a bad guy.
Oh, I hope he won.
He's a bad, look, I'm telling Matt, it's not complicated. I don't mean to be negative. He's just really bad for the country.
Yeah.
He's a harmful person.
I get that.
Well, then we saw him.
JR, could you make a better version of what you just said?
And I like when JR had the echo. It sounded like the voice of God.
Yeah.
You got a good.
It was anointed.
Yeah, you got a good second career in that. Okay, we got to take a break, guys. And after we do, California with another great law.
Oh, yeah.
Man, California's on fire. Makes a dragon want to retire, man. Second reference to it in 2 days.
I just got that.
Okay, all right. We'll be right back. All right, I got to read a bunch of tweets because they're really good. Tenside Badger says, GOP are suing drug companies. That's how you know wealthy white people are being affected. Lana Aliza says, nothing wrong with praying for your community. The problem is that government should do more than just pray about crime. Great point, similar to what JR said. Oscar P has made the most preposterous, sent the most preposterous tweet I've ever seen in TYT history, saying, I believe one day John Iadarola could be president.
Mm. Wow.
Damn.
Why?
Wow, someone smoking John, the devil's cabbage.
White House is only like 1,800 kilometers from here, my friend.
Did you check that?
I don't know. I tried to do the math.
Somebody did the math.
I think it's more, though. I think it's 5,000.
I wonder what I was saying that led to that.
Okay, well. Okay. Maybe they were doing what you suggested, smoking the weed. Okay, Atomic Elbow says, welcome home, Gina Grad.
Oh, thank you.
It's great to see you back on the Young Turks panel. And then he said something that I think Ben and I were talking about a couple weeks ago, but not on air. He read our minds. I'd love to see you on Old School Show, too. That'd be perfect.
I accept.
Yes. And by the way, you should check out Gina on the Adam Carolla Show. And at the Classic Rock and Morning Show, that's at 100.3 here in LA, The Sound. And on Twitter at Gina Grad. Okay, all right, what's up next?
Okay, let's see if we can fit in two. California Senate didn't just pass a single payer healthcare bill yesterday, it also passed a bill that would do something equally important. It would let towns push last call back to as late as 4 a.m. Under the proposal, local governments would be able to decide whether to push alcohol service hours to a specified time period between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. for restaurants and bars. It would not, however, apply to liquor stores.
It is a crazy thing that people come to Los Angeles and you, like, last call is at 1:30 in the morning and the bars are closed up at 2 o'clock.
And by crazy, you mean the best. Am I going to be the dissenting voice on this
Apparently.
One?
Apparently. Go ahead, Justice Grad.
Man, when I lived in New York with the 4 o'clock BS, I love having an excuse to not have to take the heat for like, tired, I hate this, I want to go home. And so you blame the bar. If we do 4, then I'm just an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I will say you're not the only dissenting voice because I know that last call is at 1:30 mm-hmm. in LA because I read it in a story.
My God.
I don't think I've ever been there. Yay. Maybe I have once or twice. I have,
meet you at the library.
I have so little interest. One of the main reasons that I somehow convinced a girl to date me is so I don't have to go to bars anymore. Why would anyone want to go there?
So
LA or otherwise.
One night I'm working late at TUIT, a true story, and I go downstairs and there's a ton of people. I'm like, oh, this is great, everybody's working late. Okay, turns out they're not working, they're all playing board games. And John is at the head of the table. And he's like giving directions on the board games.
Were they playing Dungeons and Dragons?
No. Okay. I'm working towards that.
And I can swear that as I was leaving, I heard, to the king of the dorks! The king of the dorks!
You know what? It's more fun. And by the way, there are an increasing number of places in cities around the world that are board game bars and cafes where you can get some food, get some drinks, play some board games. So why choose one?
Yeah.
You could start with that, sure.
You know, I don't want to say anything because it seems like I'm the cool one here, but I've been at closing time in LA once. I mean, I don't go.
Oh, really?
No, you win on this panel.
I always just think it's weird. Yeah. And then people have to go to, like, cool people go to after parties, like in Swingers.
Oh, right, yeah, you know. When you have to have the password.
Right, you gotta know. So it's just silly, and obviously businesses who make their money late at night should have the option of staying open later. That's all. It's just
no, difference. Yes.
Yeah. So look, when I moved to here, kidding aside, I certainly wasn't cool. I played ping pong mainly in high school. That was my main activity.
If I could do anything this weekend for 2.5 hours, it would be play ping pong.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? Anyway, I had just. Oh, that's awesome.
Interesting.
Okay, are you open past 2?
We're open all night as long as I get to stay home.
So I had just come from New York and Miami, where New York, of course, you know, all night. And Miami, to be fair, did pass a law when we were there on Miami Beach saying, no, the bars must close by 10 a.m. Okay, not kidding. That's a true story.
Time to sweep up.
Yes, that's a true story. Okay, wow. And so when I came here to LA, it was a culture shock. So I was single at the time. I went out to bars, and I remember the first place I went, they started closing at 1 o'clock. I was like, "What? What just happened?" I'm like, "We just
got here."
You know, in Miami, you would have literally just gotten there, right? I'm like, no, you're kidding. LA, Hollywood, all the, and we're closing at last drinks at 1? That's insane.
Well, when you put it like that, it's a little embarrassing.
It is. It's embarrassing as a city. And the bottom line, of course, is I'm an American, so I believe in freedom. So let the bars, the local community agrees, let the bars go for as long as they want. Yeah, yeah, yeah. God bless.
How about compromise? You can last call can be 2, 3, 4, but you also get to smoke weed there.
Ooh, but then totally they wouldn't have any business.
That's true. And that just means the drunks pee on your lawn for 2 more hours. I don't think communities are going to get behind this.
Well, then you can vote against it.
Yeah.
But it has passed the Senate in California. Right. So that means that now it goes to the cities, and your city can have your bars close at 4 a.m. Doesn't mean you have to.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's next, John?
Okay, one more for you. To get into college, you often, in most cases, will have to write essays. And so to get into Yale, one teenager named Carolina Williams wrote an essay about the one thing she truly loves in the world, ordering Papa John's delivery. She put this tweet out, "I just want Papa John's to know that I wrote a college essay about how much I love to order their pizza, and it got me into Yale." So not only did she write it, it was actually a good strategy. And so we're going to show you some of this. This is part of the longer essay. "When the delivery person rings my doorbell, I instantly morph into one of Pavlov's dogs, salivating to the sound that signals the arrival of cheesy circular glory," which can refer to something else too.
Yeah, I was going to say
it
that sounds
smells awesome. "Like celebration, as I love to rejoice a happy occasion by calling Papa John's for my favorite food. It tastes like comfort. Accepting these warm cardboard boxes at my front door is second nature to me, but I will always love ordering pizza because of the way 8 slices of something so ordinary are able to evoke feelings of independence, consolation, and joy." That's just a short section of it.
I don't understand if she likes eating the pizza or she likes ordering the pizza.
She likes eating it and not having to go and get it, which is, those are my two favorite things about pizza too. Also Jim Gaffigan. And if you can bring up this picture, you're going to see her posing afterward with a triumphant Papa John's pizza. Which, by the way, Papa John's politically is kind of a mess, but the pizza's pretty good.
Well, it's mainly that industrial garlic sauce they have.
Yeah, everybody loves garlic. That's actually, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And, yeah. So really fast, I thought we'd have the full tweet. But there were responses from people at Yale, like on her file or whatever. And just, they were laughing, they thought it was so funny. And some of them also like Papa John's.
Yeah, and the admitting officer said that she laughed out loud reading it. And so she enjoyed that it was a fun, spirited, but well-written essay.
Oh, actually, just close it out, though. It's very important, because some people are going to be like, look at these lib colleges. They got her in off a pizza. Her application also included a high GPA, volunteer work, as well as memberships with the English Honor Society, National Honor Society, Model UN.
Just because they wrote about the government. Yeah. She was in the camp that could have gotten in. Yeah, you know.
But that's not the craziest part of this whole thing. It's not that she got into Yale because of pizza. It's that she got into Yale and then chose to go to a different college, Auburn University.
Wow.
She's going to Auburn?
Yes. Yes. It's closer to home.
That's a pimp move. Good for her. Shut him down.
It is. I agree with both of you. It is a pimp move, and it is the wrong move.
It's the wrong move.
Yale's kind of expensive.
No, no. God bless Auburn. Auburn's a great university. Yale, a better one. Okay. And so, look, if you're going to spend all that money on college, and I'm sure that Yale is more expensive, but she's out of state for Auburn, so it's not.
I have thoughts about Auburn, which will merely evoke anger from people who like Auburn. So I'll keep that to myself. But it's not. You get into Yale, you go to Yale, young lady.
Yeah.
Like don't be foolish. Get some financial aid. Work on getting financial aid. That money is there for people who ask for it usually, you know.
Yeah.
And
you get to see scenic New Haven, Connecticut.
Ben and I have talked about this in the past, that you don't get a lot of breaks in life, right?
That's right.
It's life is hard enough. You scored a pretty nice break getting into Yale. So part of the reason that why we say that is because you're likely to make more money when you get out of Yale. I mean, I'm just keeping it real here. Isn't that a conservative position?
You can argue. It is an argument worth making that there are like four colleges in the country that make a difference, and then there's like a 7,900 way tie for second, and then there's some bad schools, right?
Right. Yes.
And those four schools would be Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford. Right, and that, you know, and obviously there's a second group there, Columbia and Penn, and there's some really good schools.
MIT,
MIT, I count there, I guess, too. But that's in a different world, right?
Yeah.
So, and if you can get into one of those four, for the love of God, you go.
And you got
they got Papa John's in New Haven, man.
They're everywhere.
In fact, they have great pizza, great real non Papa John's pizza in New Haven, Connecticut. Good place for pizza, am I right?
Well, yeah. Who wants that? My question is, I mean, I get it as a cute little stunt. She wrote a nice essay. She got the grade, so it's all good. Is this a slippery slope where products and businesses start offering the kids a little something extra to do this and make a big publicity stunt out of it?
Well, I actually think that there might be a second problem that comes out of this. First, let's acknowledge she obviously earned it. You know how hard it is to get into Yale?
By the way.
It is only 6.9% of the people who apply get into Yale. Okay, it is incredibly hard.
Oh my God.
So her GPA and her scores must have been through the roof, and she had a cute angle here. And I get it was a bit of a cheesy idea, if you will, but I liked it. I liked it. God bless. If I was the admitting officer, I probably would have done the same thing. Okay, but overall, it's a slippery slope to Gina's point, and everybody's going to start doing these gimmicks, and it's not going to work.
No.
Yeah. Be careful, guys. You're not going to get in because I like Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
So. Word to the wise. All right, guys, thank you so much. Thank you, Gina, everybody.
Thanks
and we're done. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.